are the worst person I know. I think what I hate most about you is your textbook liberal agenda, how we should legalize pot, man, how big business is crushing the underclass, how homelessness is the biggest tragedy in America. Well, what have you done to help? I work down at the soup kitchen. Never seen you down there. You want to help? Grab a ladle. And by the way, driving a Prius doesn't make you Jesus Christ. Oh, wait, you don't believe in Jesus Christ, or any religion for that matter, because religion is for idiots. Well, who the hell are you to talk down to anyone? But you know what? I can forgive all of that, all of it, if you weren't such a bore. That's the worst of it. You're just a big, sad bore.
Radio, and we are back and we are live. Welcome to the show 1 minute after the hour right here on blogtalkradio.com. It's Reese on the Radio this November 14th, 2012. Oh, and just as it would happen, they always wait too damn late. And just right before the show, before they want to reveal something important. Anybody want to see the bald, shirtless FBI agent? Go to my Facebook page. You can get a great picture of him. He doesn't have a shirt. He has his shirt on. He's in a suit. Apparently, he is a real, real diligent bulldog of an FBI agent. And he apparently is the one who started the big Petraeus scandal. Of course, with the accomplice, his accomplice, Jill Kelly, the party planner, who apparently got her hooks in this baldy. Oh, I look at this guy and I know he was manipulated. He sent her shirtless pictures, the old Anthony Weiner style, you know, showing how buff he is. You know, look at me, I'm a tough guy. Come on, party planner, don't you want a piece of this? And she manipulated this bald FBI agent to then go out there on a wild goose chase to over some emails. Emails that suggested that Jill Kelly was out there for, you know, screwing around. Not anything sexual, but she was using people. She was using her feminine wiles to get ahead. Aside from the fact that her and her husband were $3 million in debt, damn! $3 million in debt, had huge financial difficulties. They had this military access. He had a sister with issue going on with her own son. Twin sisters got custody problems.
Who had a sister?
Jill Kelly has a twin sister.
Yeah. And they say that she's unfit.
Yeah, they say that she's unfit. She's got two generals. Two four-star generals. I don't know if Allen is a general. I know General Allen. No, I know Petraeus is a four-star general. I don't know about General Allen. But nonetheless, these are star generals. Writings. Recommendation letters for some woman that got her child taken away from her, had them reconsidering. This woman has been pushing her weight around and their feminine wiles around. They are just a bunch of skeezers. I know you haven't heard that word in a long time. Some of you have never heard it before. That's what we used to call them back in the day, you know, skeezers. You can make up your own determination of what that means or how you want to interpret it. That's on your own. Anyway, let's get to the story. Apparently, this FBI agent, his name is Frederick W. Humphreys II. He's 47 years old, and he was the one who took the initial complaint from Jill Kelly. He took the initial complaint and then used that complaint and started going to his contacts and getting them to investigate where the emails were coming from. And, of course, that's how they found out that the emails came from Paula Broadwell. Now, I normally don't do this, but I guess I have to. This is NBC's report with Andrea Mitchell explaining the details into the scandal that just won't go away. Andrea Mitchell reports, NBC News.
Good evening, Brian. Today, new details emerged about how the emails that Paula Broadwell sent anonymously to a Tampa woman who socialized with two four-star generals, David Petraeus and John Allen, set off a chain of events that ended Petraeus' CIA career. even as the president spoke for the first time about the scandal. At his news conference, the president went out of his way to praise Petraeus.
He has provided this country an extraordinary service. We are safer because of the work that Dave Petraeus has done.
As Paula Broadwell remained in Washington, staying with her brother and still not talking, officials say the investigation was triggered in May when General John Allen received an email from an account called Kelly Patrol. Sources close to Kelly say it warned the general to stay away from her, that she could ruin him. General Allen say people close to Jill Kelly forwarded it to her on the account she shares with her husband, Scott, thinking she'd sent it as a joke. Sources close to Kelly say she told General Allen she had not sent it, but was concerned that she was being stalked or electronically hacked because the email referred to a meeting she and General Allen had scheduled in Washington for the following week. In June, people close to Kelly say she and her husband received as many as 4 similar emails from different accounts telling Jill she's up to no good, asking her husband, "Do you know what your wife is up to when she has dinner with General Petraeus?" She turned over all of the emails, including General Allen's, to an FBI agent she knew, never realizing the impact they would have. The people close to the Kellys say Jill Kelly never had an affair with General Allen, and the Pentagon has found no evidence to the contrary. But officials say the emails had enough inappropriate language to warrant an investigation.
No one should leap to any conclusions here. General Allen is doing an excellent job at ISAF in leading those forces. He certainly has my continued confidence to lead our forces and to continue the fight.
Also today, the FBI continued looking through documents they took Monday night from Broadwell's home, but so far have found no evidence of anything highly classified. But today, the Pentagon suspended Broadwell's security clearances, and MacDill Air Force Base revoked Jill Kelly's pass to the base. Tonight, the Marine Corps Chief Defense Counsel issued a statement that General Allen intends to fully cooperate with investigators and wants to resolve questions about the emails as completely and quickly as possible. Pentagon officials say that General Allen is still running the war in Afghanistan, but acknowledge that the controversy alone could doom his nomination to be the Supreme Allied Commander of NATO. And also, Ryan, late today, NBC News has confirmed the name of that FBI agent who got this all started and Kelly reached out to. It is Frederick W. Humphrey II, described as a veteran agent.
All right, Andrea Mitchell, as the story continues to develop, Andrea, thanks.
So there you have it. Now, the details of this email that is supposed to be so scathing are pretty much just saying, hey, watch out for this broad. She's going to ruin your career. Broadwell obviously knew about meetings that she was having with General Petraeus because she had access to General Petraeus. The fact that these emails were coming out was the fact that they were telling people to watch out for this broad. She's a schemer. How this warranted an investigation or for anybody to believe that we need to then investigate Paula Broadwell, I don't know. But this guy, William Humphreys, obviously, who's got, you know, a little thing for Kelly, he was the one that prompted all this, which is clearly, I mean, there's no other way to put it. The bottom line is he had some interest in this young lady. He had some interest in her. She probably coerced him. Come on, honey. Can you check it out for your favorite gal? And this dork jumped on it. I'll do anything. You crazy? I'll break national security protocol for you. What are you, nuts? When are you going to do another party? And he jumped at it. Like a little lapdog. It's disgusting, it's pathetic, and it's awful. Oh, but you know they're going to go after him. I mean, I don't know. Can you call him a snitch? Can you call him a snitch, man?
Call who?
Frederick Humphreys.
Of course.
You can call him a snitch?
Yeah. They're all a bunch of snitches. They're a bunch of snitching bitches.
But see, the worst part about it is that Paula Broadwell is getting a little bit of a buffer here because of this woman, Jill Kelly's background. Now, folks, this isn't that dissimilar to one Linda Tripp. This is not that dissimilar to how the public and the press tried to excoriate and defame Linda Tripp for being the whistleblower, or, hey, rightly so, the snitch in the Monica Lewinsky scandal. So they're going to rip this woman apart. And she's got a shady background, which doesn't help her. Did you hear about the 911 call?
No.
Okay, so apparently they have her on tape. And I barely ever get this audio, because every time they play it, I miss it. But there's audio of Jill Kelly calling the police about somebody being in her yard. And she just tells the police officer, hey, I have somebody in my yard. Can you send somebody down here? Because, you know, I'm worried about it. So the cop says, sure, no problem. We'll send a patrol officer down there. Then she goes into this conversation about how she has this diplomatic sort of security, I guess, apparatus. In some degree, that she has some sort of diplomatic stats.
Mm-hmm.
Sort of a name dropper, if you will.
Uh-huh.
As if to tell the police, you know, she deserves some sort of preferential treatment. So people are kind of making a mockery of that. They're making fun of it. That this woman was using all of her contacts to get access. That's what she's using these people for. She's a user. That's the bottom line. There's no other way to put it. But in the midst of all of that, let's get into what's more important. Let's get into what's more important here, folks. And that is the president's first press conference in what? Was this 8 months? 8+ months? And he was immediately asked by the Associated Press about the confidence of General David Petraeus and whether or not he, the president, thought that there was a security breach of any sort. Here's how that went.
I'm going to start off with Ben Feller of AP.
Thank you, Mr. President. Can you assure the American people that there have been no breaches of national security or classified information in the scandal involving Generals Petraeus and Allen? And do you think that you, as Commander-in-Chief, and the American people should have been told that the CIA chief was under investigation before the election?
Well, I have no evidence at this point, from what I've seen, that classified information was disclosed that in any way would have had a negative impact on our national security. Obviously, there's an ongoing investigation. I don't want to comment on the specifics of the investigation. The FBI has its own protocols in terms of how they proceed. I'm going to let Director Mueller and others examine those protocols and make some statements to the public generally. I do want to emphasize what I've said before. General Petraeus had an extraordinary career. He served this country with great distinction in Iraq, in Afghanistan, and as head of the CIA. By his own assessment, he did not meet the standards that he felt were necessary as the director of CIA with respect to this personal matter that he is now dealing with his family and with his wife. And it's on that basis that he tendered his resignation, and it's on that basis that I accepted it. But I want to emphasize that, from my perspective at least, he has provided this country an extraordinary service. We are safer because of the work that Dave Petraeus has done. And my main hope right now is that he and his family are able to move on, and that this ends up being a single side note on what has otherwise been an extraordinary career.
Yeah, so that was how we dealt with David Petraeus. Kept it moving from there. But again, what I love about this story is that it's obvious that it cannot be avoided by the press or by anybody else for that matter, and definitely the President of the United States, about the situation in Benghazi. And President Obama had to deal with that in increments. He only took about 10 questions. He does as he always does. He filibusters and gives these long answers. But I'd like to give you one that sticks out the most. This is the one that sticks out the most. This is a question by Jonathan Carl of ABC News. And look, there's no going around. ABC News wants to ridicule Republicans in this whole videotape claim by Susan Rice, the UN ambassador. And they want to ridicule Republicans about it. But see, here, the President of the United States sticks his foot in it by trying to be defiant. Sometimes I always tell people, never ever be too bold. Never be too bold if you aren't willing to take the consequences. It's like you do in any other fight. Look, if you see a guy wants to kick your ass, you've got to decide then if you're going to step up and take the ass whipping, or if you know confidently you're going to whip his ass. But the decision that you make, right then and there, you cannot pull back. And if you go into the fight and you make all this boasting like you're going to kick somebody's ass and you get your ass whipped, deal with the consequences. And President Obama is about to get his ass kicked thanks to Jonathan Carl and his answer to this question.
Jonathan Carl.
Thank you, Mr. President. Senator John McCain and Senator Lindsey Graham both said today that they want to have Watergate-style hearings on the attack on the U.S. consulate in Benghazi, and said that if you nominate Susan Rice to be Secretary of State, they will do everything in their power to block her nomination. As Senator Graham said, he simply doesn't trust Ambassador Rice after what she said about Benghazi. I'd like your reaction to that, and would those threats deter you from making a nomination like that?
Well, first of all, I'm not going to comment at this point on various nominations that I'll put forward to fill out my cabinet for the second term. Those are things that are still being discussed. But let me say specifically about Susan Rice. She has done exemplary work. She has represented the United States and our interests in the United Nations with skill and professionalism and toughness and grace. As I said before, she made an appearance at the request of the White House, in which she gave her best understanding of the intelligence that had been provided to her.
Really? At the request of the White House, she gave the best assessment of the intelligence as it was given to her. But the White House knew in 24 hours that it was a terrorist attack. Take note, that's what the president just told everyone in a press conference today. Everybody knows the emails have been revealed, the cables have been revealed, that they knew within 24 hours that an Al-Qaeda operative had been responsible for the attack in 24 hours. Yet the next Sunday, some 5 days later, on the request of the White House, Susan Rice goes to 5 Sunday programs and says that it was a result of a YouTube video.
As I've said before, she made an appearance at the request of the White House, in which she gave her best understanding of the intelligence that had been provided to her. If Senator McCain and Senator Graham and others want to go after somebody, they should go after me. And I'm happy to have that discussion with them. But for them to go after the UN ambassador, who had nothing to do with Benghazi, and was simply making a presentation based on intelligence that she had received.
But to go after the UN ambassador about Benghazi?
Is he talking about the UN ambassador that got killed because of him and Benghazi?
He says that the UN ambassador, to go after her over Benghazi, something she has nothing to do with, then why was she out there at the request of the White House talking about Benghazi? I mean, it's a simple question. But for them to go after Susan Rice about something she had nothing to do with, then why did you say, I mean, you literally contradict yourself here, Mr. President. For them to go after her based upon your request to send her out there and give that false information. We're not to attack her. Oh, we're supposed to attack you. So she's just, what is she?
She's just a stoolie?
Yep.
And to besmirch her reputation is outrageous. And, you know, we're after an election then. I think it is important for us to find out exactly what happened in Benghazi, and I'm happy to cooperate in any ways that Congress wants. We have provided every bit of information that we have, and we will continue to provide information, and we've got a full-blown investigation. And all that information will be disgorged to Congress. And I don't think there's any debate in this country that when you have four Americans killed, that's a problem. And we've got to get to the bottom of it, and there needs to be accountability. We've got to bring those who carried it out to justice. They won't get any debate from me on that. But when they go after the UN ambassador, apparently because they think she's an easy target, then they've got a problem with me.
Then they got a problem.
Well, what you gonna do, Negro?
What you gonna do? That's my response. What you gonna do? That's, if I was John McCain, I'd be like, what? I can't even get my hands up to cover my face. What you gonna do?
You told her ass to get out there and say that dumb shit.
That's what you want.
And now you're trying to have her back. You threw her ass to the wolves. And now you want to recant?
Yeah, now you act like, oh, she's, why are you picking on her? She ain't do nothing. She's just doing what I told her to do.
You got a problem, come see me.
You again?
We've been trying to see you.
No. That's the best line
Your
ever.
Your ass has been hiding.
Exactly. Come see me.
We know you were the one. We know you were the perpetrator.
Where have you been? Where the hell have you been?
And what you think, because your dumb ass got reelected, we're going to let it go?
Yeah, it's like...
Not happening, Pat.
It's the funniest thing ever.
Why don't you resign?
Exactly. Okay, so then Ed Henry...
People are killing themselves because your dumbass got reelected.
See that? Anyway, Ed Henry of Fox News.
And running motherfuckers over.
All right, honey.
Sorry.
All right. Anyway, Ed Henry of Fox News, then he got his chance to ask a question, which for some odd reason I got the impression that he was not going to get to Fox News. But if you watch the press conference, you can always see when he's got to go to Ed Henry, who, by the way, I don't know if you know this. You know we have the correspondents' dinner every year, right?
Of course.
Right. And... during the correspondence dinner, they always elect a person who's the chairperson of the correspondence dinner. It's a member of the press. Well, last year, Ed Henry was elected to be the new head of the correspondence association or whatever. So, yeah, now he's in charge. So he can't avoid Fox News at this particular point, but he took forever to get to Ed Henry, who asked what I thought was a very pertinent question. Because but less important of the American people finding out what happened in Benghazi, but the family members of those who died have been all over the news, or at least at Fox and a little bit at CNN, talking about what happened to their children or to their family members. So Ed Henry got a chance to ask.
Ed Henry. Of your decisive victory. Stay in Benghazi based on what John asked, because you said if they want to come after me, come after me. I wanted to ask about the families of these four Americans who were killed. Sean Smith's father, Ray, said he believes his son basically called 911 for help, and they didn't get it. And I know you've said you grieve for these four Americans, that it's being investigated, but the families have been waiting for more than 2 months. So I would like for you to address the families if you can. On 9/11, as Commander-in-Chief, did you issue any orders to try to protect their lives?
Ed, I'll address the families not through the press. I'll address the families directly, as I already have. And we will provide all the information that is available about what happened on that day. That's what the investigation's for. But as I said repeatedly, if people don't think that we did everything we can to make sure that we saved the lives of folks who I sent there and who were carrying out missions on behalf of the United States, then you don't know how our Defense Department thinks or our State Department thinks or our CIA thinks. Their number one priority is obviously to protect American lives. That's what our job is. Now, I will put forward every bit of information that we have. I can tell you that immediately upon finding out that our folks were in danger, that my orders to my national security team were do whatever we need to do to make sure they're safe. And that's the same order that I would give any time that I see Americans are in danger, whether they're civilian or military, because that's our number one priority.
Now, if you didn't hear...
You're a goddamn lie.
Yeah, everybody is sort of looking at that, and they're all, they have the same, they all had the same sort of reaction to that, because Ed Henry asked, look, it's a specific question. Did you enact an executive order? And he wouldn't answer the question. He said, do whatever it is you can to help the, you know, to protect our guys. But wires prove otherwise. That they, you know, people were told to stand down. People who wanted to go in there and fight and go save lives and go after to go help Ambassador Stevens were still told, you know, stand down and not to go out there. Some 7 hours later, you don't get any help. These guys said that, they, you know, look, they did call 911 and no one came for a fight to go on for 7 hours. And you've got military.
They called the biggest 911 operator in the world.
Right. And you got other operatives in Italy who were literally 4 hours away, but an attack took 7 hours. And the guys don't get there until 10 hours from when the fighting starts. That's a little bit, you know. And of course, he didn't answer them. One minor note, and I have no idea why I'm playing this, but you have to see it for who it is, for what it is. A woman by the name of Christy Parsons was also there and during the press conference. And if you ever want to see a person of the press kindly put the president's genitalia in their mouth, to put it lightly, this is the moment. Mitt Romney. Sorry, that's not. Oh, I skipped it. I want to make sure I go to that. Okay, here it is.
Christy Parsons.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. President, and congratulations, by the way. One quick follow-up.
Was there in when I was running for state senate.
That's
so
right, I was.
Christy and I go back a ways.
I've never seen you lose. I wasn't looking that one time.
There you go.
Congratulations on your win. I've never seen you lose.
I wasn't looking that one time. Bitch, you ain't going to be looking when they hit you with a Mack truck either.
So, look, I don't care what anybody says right now. The president has flat out stuck his neck out on this Benghazi thing, and now forget about it. Susan Rice, for her to be at any part of the State Department, he can forget about, just withdraw her name right now. I don't want to hear anything about Susan Rice if he so much as puts her on his top list or his short list. He's a moron, because right now she is on Front Street.
Well, I don't think that he should be able to assign anybody to anything.
Well, that's his job.
No.
We can't assign
anybody.
No, no, no,
no, no. Yeah, well, you work for me, buddy. You work for me and a lot of other people.
Yeah.
And we should be involved in the panel.
Yeah, I know.
Because we ain't happy with your ass. We sure ain't going to be happy with anybody you pick. And everybody that you have picked seems to be from the rotten bunch.
Anyway, let's get a break in real quick, because it's the bottom of the hour. But I just wanted to play that audio, and we'll take your responses when we get back. So stick around. It's Reese on the Radio. I know I've got the guys on the line, and they're going to want to chime in on this, because I want to hear what it is they have to say and where it is that we can go from here. By the way, I got to talk about Tebow today, because I am really, really pissed off at members of the New York Jets today for going out there and
making some really, really horrible statements about my boy Tebow. Good guy. And a cowardly thing happened in the Daily News the other day. We'll talk about that later on in the show. But when we get back, we'll talk about – we'll respond to all of this audio that we just played and, of course, that and much more when we return. It's Reese on the Radio.
$1,500 Yeah, yeah, yo, yo, this one's for the people. All the bees that are bleeding, it's deep in the east, it bleeds. I thought we all equal. Ain't a man on the God's green bee underneath any other. I don't wanna play preacher, but I swear they turn a ear when we talk about peace and love. Sometimes might need a hug. Yeah, we all wanna come on up above, but this ain't about Jesus. No way, no Abe, no Ike, Moses or Muhammad. Yeah, it's all about believing. Full steam ahead because you know the worst times are behind me. I don't wanna sound cheesy, but it's just to really mean it. Yeah, I'm telling, I can feel it. It's the reason I don't sleep. I'll be way too weak tonight. This one's for all of y'all. I'm the same as all of y'all. I'm on my shit. I work real hard enough for every little bit that I get. But this is all I need. So sing this song with me. It goes like, so sound like this. Everybody start clapping hands. It's like.
with your old lady at the tilt. I got a 90-day decision and I'm filled with guilt. From scenes gonna seem, the water's from a bottle, mine from a canteen. At night I hit a shot, scream for my life, sleep rough. Cause of life, things to get deeper. Out in the desert with a sea sweeper. The war is over, so set the speaker. With the fight to warn, they can hear them with the pawn. So each in the band, remember when the beat stands.
Man, all I want is. Minutes after the hour, right here on Reese on the Radio, this November 14th, 2012. Now, I know Sal has got something to say about this whole sticking his foot in it, President Obama. Talk about this not going away anytime soon. Now that the president has flat out admitted that Susan Rice was acting on the direct orders of the White House to say that this is a YouTube video, even though it's been known for weeks now that the White House knew within 24 hours that this was a premeditated and coordinated attack on the consulate in Benghazi. Sal?
Yeah, oh, yeah, absolutely. I just didn't know if you were finished.
No, you were on.
There. You know, this there's something else to this, and I haven't had a lot of time to really follow up on a lot of the stories that are coming out, but there's something about this story, and I mentioned it last time we talked about this whole thing where I thought this was a ruse, right?
Mm-hmm.
So this point, there's something that is absolutely true that isn't passing the sniff test on this Petraeus thing. So he's a general, or he was a general. So he's got the highest clearance possible, okay?
Right.
A general, just because they're a general, doesn't evade security clearance protocol. He has to be, generally, there are polygraphs at that level that you have to take. There are two different kinds of polygraphs. One's a lifestyle polygraph.
Mm-hmm.
You don't get away, you don't get to be a general or stay being a general if you're not always taking these polygraphs, especially where, when you transfer it to the CIA, it's a different clearance because it's a different compartment.
Right.
You tell me how it's possible that any of this story is true, because it would have came up on a poly.
Well, Sal, interestingly enough, I heard that story maybe about 2 days ago about the whole polygraph system when it comes to especially transferring from one, you know, being general of the military and then moving, of course, to the director of the CIA, which is, you know, that's the intelligence agency. And his polygraph, it's been reported that there was no polygraph taken by General Petraeus in that transfer.
Who knows, okay? Who knows? At that level, maybe they gave him a pass, but it just doesn't follow any protocol at all. You don't give people a pass because they're high in the chain. You give them more scrutiny, and you give them
absolutely
more rigorous testing, and you do it more often. It doesn't pass scrutiny. Now, I'll tell you what. If there was a test given, there's a record of it somewhere. It just – this thing could – now, if they didn't give him a poly, well, then maybe this is true, and maybe they did catch him through an email account. But I got to say this. A general who's the head of the CIA – so there's this thing out there called onion routing, and the CIA is all over this thing because what it does is it allows you to mask who you are no matter where you are. Very
mm-hmm.
difficult to point where a person's coming from. The CIA knows all about this. So if this guy didn't want to be detected, he would have implemented these particular things that are out there and steps, and they never would have found this account. You don't open an email account and think it's private when you work in that business.
Well, it was a Gmail account, Sal. They said it was
it
a regular Google account.
So what's the point?
Yeah, I mean,
I don't get the point.
Here's what I find interesting, okay? The fact is that, and what is it, Judge Napolitano, who's always on Shepard Smith's show on at 3 o'clock on Fox. I think it's called the Fox Report.
He said something interesting today. And I love listening to lawyers and judges talk about the law, especially federal law. What he said today that I found so striking was that if this FBI agent, who's I guess William Humphreys, if he's read these emails that Jill Kelly gave to him, and the emails are not threatening, the emails aren't saying, I'm going to kill you, I'm going to burn down your house, I'm going to boil your rabbit in your pot, nothing along those lines, just these sort of claims where, watch out for this woman, do you know what your wife is doing, things like that. No threats, just pretty much saying, harassment at best. And you go in, you find out this woman, Paula Broadwell, is the person who's a recipient there. To then diligently go through her emails to find out other things about her that then lead to Petraeus, and then an investigation into Petraeus pursues, the question begs, what led them to then go, okay, we found out who the woman was, Paula Broadwell, and the investigation doesn't stop there. We found out who's harassing you, and then pursue Paula Broadwell. What made them go a step further into finding out other intimate details about Paula Broadwell, other than finding out who she is and then coming to her and saying, why are you sending these harassing emails to Jill Kelly? That should have been the extent of their investigation. If they went further than that and started going after General Petraeus for no reason, anything that they do in that case would be inadmissible because Petraeus had nothing to do with these threatening emails, or no, they're not even threatening emails, these catty emails under an assumed name. They had nothing to do with Petraeus. Petraeus didn't warrant them. He did not pursue Jill Kelly in any particular way. He knew her personally. So what would make them leap from finding out who Paula Broadwell was to then finding out everything Paula Broadwell knew? Was it a fishing expedition on the part of Paula Broadwell? Did somebody recognize her name and go, hey, that's the broad that did the Petraeus book? And then go on a fishing expedition, find out what they found out, and then made this about something completely different.
I have a theory on that, and it has the fact is that that's BS. And the reason that that's BS is that's your cover story after the fact where you have all the information you need. Because they don't want to disclose the methods that they're undertaking to monitor citizens. Now, that includes people who are military. Everybody knows that they're being monitored, but the level of which they will go, they still don't want to come out with that. So what you do then is you're really watching Petraeus. You find this tie to Broadwell, and then you pretend you come out and say you were looking at Broadwell because of these harassing emails. Because once you go after somebody's email, you could take anything in her email and make it the reason. And then they found this thing where she was sending all this. I believe it's a total fabrication. The total fabrication. They were watching Petraeus, or, and this is what I think is going on, this is not a secret to anybody. This was there. They all knew this. They knew it forever because they watch you. Okay? I'm going to give you
a they didn't have any, Sal, they had no warrant. There was nothing to warrant an investigation into Petraeus.
You don't need a warrant when someone has a security clearance.
No. I used the word, I said nothing warranted was what I'm saying. I'm not talking about a warrant, an actual warrant. But nothing warrants a Petraeus investigation. This is what it is that I'm saying is, as far as this is concerned.
I don't want to tie up the phones, but I'm just going to tell you that if you have a clearance at any level at all, you're always being watched. Your internet traffic, every single connection out of your home is fed into Comcast, okay, and Verizon. They maintain records for a certain period of time for private citizens. The government then has a second rule which states that if they request, they can have Comcast or any of these providers hold all of your internet traffic for up to a year, okay? And then they can go back through it. Well, your internet traffic tells everything. Everything's there.
I understand that, Sal, but listen to what I'm saying as far as the FBI, and this is what Judge Napolitano was saying as far as this is concerned. You have this email called KellyWatch, at gmail.com, that's sending Jill Kelly the emails. Do you know what your does your husband know? I mean, saying to the husband, do you know what your wife is doing? Stay away from this woman. She'll ruin your career. Stuff like that. So they get the email address. They locate who the person is who's sending it, right? They link it. They find out it belongs to Paula Broadwell. What then gets them to then jump on? Is that back? Is that him again? What causes him to then jump on the private emails of Paula Broadwell, her separate personal account? The only thing you need to do in an investigation is, look, I'm trying to find out who it is that's making these comments about me. You're trying to find out who is this person who's writing these emails about me and making these scathing, you know, proclamations about who it is that I am as a person, saying don't trust me. Who is this person? So the guy goes and investigates it. Okay, I'll check out the email. Hey, we found out it's this woman, Paula Broadwell. What then tempts them or prompts them to go further into who Paula Broadwell is or her personal account? There's nothing to warrant it. Nothing.
But Reese, if you look into her email and you see past correspondence with military, of course you look at it.
But not, remember, we're talking about the Kelly Watch email address.
But they weren't sending emails. They were leaving it in a draft folder. Okay? So they weren't transmitting the email. And then what happens is, and I don't want to get too much into this, but what you can watch is you can see if somebody's logging into mail accounts from different locations and not sending it, that is something that terrorists do. The FBI knows this. They know that the tech that terrorists use so that they won't be found, because they think by not transmitting the email over the wire that they're safe. They were using that technique. That's what probably tipped them off that someone in the know was doing this.
What he's saying is they would draft up an email, leave it in the draft box. Someone else would sign in from another location, read the email, reply, leave it in a draft box. Then the other person signs in from somewhere else, and then they read the email. So they're never really transmitting the emails, but everyone has access to that email. Address.
I got what you're saying. I don't.
Eventually, they'd track it back.
Right. I understand that, but I don't think that in this particular case that this. I believe that Jill Kelly used her friendship with this agent, which again, him acting on his friendship or infatuation, if you will. You know, he's sending her topless pictures of himself. Working on that infatuation then goes a step further, or maybe a step too far. And the only indication that I have of that is what they did with the FBI agent, Frederick Humphreys, after the fact. They removed him from the case. They said he's too obsessed with this case, and they removed him from it. So
it's entirely possible that you're onto one piece of this that is absolutely true. So he probably has a thing for this woman, and because he's in the FBI, he gets into her account and he starts snooping around and just finds this. It's possible. It's entirely possible.
Oh, yeah. I think that he used his influence in the – I mean, I understand in 2000 he's one of the agents that thwarted the Millennium attack. There was the Millennium terrorist attack. He was one of the guys who infiltrated, I guess, the group that was trying to commit that act in and I believe this was the greenhouse building attack. He was one of the guys that was involved in that. So he is a high-ranking sort of FBI agent. He's got a lot of status there. So he got people to move in places where you normally wouldn't get. Because the question still begs, who the hell is this woman to warrant an FBI investigation? She's no higher-up. They call her this liaison, but she was nothing more than a party planner. It was like the dog catcher getting FBI an FBI escort.
Yeah, but dude, haven't you watched James Bond movies? I mean, come on. The woman is the one that always gets the information because they're in a position to compromise the man, you know? And that's very true. And that is one of the biggest holes in national security is men's indiscretion. And they're all over that stuff because of it.
It turns out that that's what everybody was doing. I mean, I look at the three guys right now. General Adams, General Allen, General Petraeus, and now this guy, FBI agent Frederick Humphreys. Each and every one of these guys are caught with their pants down.
I think this thing gets big because this is one of those snowballs that just keeps going.
Oh,
because
without a doubt, I don't think there's any other way to put it. Let's bring in Dennis. Dennis, how are you today, sir?
Yeah, hello, sir. Good evening. This is not going to go anywhere. American people could care less. Doesn't have legs.
What is
well,
it
I'm
that
saying
you don't
that think- to be facetious because I saw a headline in another lamestream media saying exactly that or close to it, saying that, you know, there's nothing. Move along, folks. Nothing to see here. People don't have any interest and it will mean nothing. See how the parameter is already being built with this?
Yeah, the truth of that is that because of the fact that, as far as the Petraeus story goes, yeah, that's eventually going to die down because it can only go so far. They'll rip this woman, Jill Kelly, a new one until they're done with her. They'll chew up and they'll spit her out. Of course, the only thing that's keeping us alive is the fact that Paula Broadwell has not spoken. She's not even at home. She's at home. She's living with her brother now. So that appears to me that her husband has kicked her out.
You
so
see,
that's
Reese,
an issue.
The people in this show care about America. But America
well, yeah,
is not the Reese on the radio show, unfortunately. And the attitude is, if it's not in my home, not in my backyard, if it's not affecting me, who cares?
Well,
that's the attitude of a lot of people. I know somebody just came back from Afghanistan. That's his attitude. He could care less. It's just, you know, it's not his business, so move on and what's on Dancing with the Stars tonight?
I doubt that's going to happen anytime soon because I believe that the general public or the general media, they like this story, and if anything else sort of comes up in this, they'll stay on it for a little while. I don't think it lasts longer than this week. I mean, that much is
But remember what Orwell said. It's only a crisis in your mind if the media tells you it's a crisis.
Sure enough.
Something like that.
But the bigger story this week, because, again, we've got Thursday and Friday coming up, and that's why I believe that it won't last till the end of this week. The bigger story is going to be when Petraeus meets with the Senate committee, which could happen tomorrow or Friday.
Yeah, but Reese, do people have the background to be able to digest what it is they're listening to place it in proper perspective? I think not.
I don't
these
you know what,
days.
That, I don't.
Some people.
I don't want to un. I don't want to misjudge the American public, unless of course it comes to election time and they vote for Barack Obama. But we still have to look at this.
Yeah,
that's
the guy in New York who offed himself, you know.
Even if 60 million people who are leftists who would vote for President Obama would not care about this story, there's still another 58 million on the other side who will play extreme, who will deal with this in an extreme way and will pay attention to it in an extreme way. It goes without
saying. So therefore, do you see a wave election in 2 years when one-third of the Senate and the entire House comes up again?
Yeah.
By then, we shall have the information, hopefully.
Well, I'm sure, look, there's no running from this. The president put his foot in it, and not only that, he stuck his neck out today.
He owns it.
Yeah, exactly. He's already taken ownership. She went out there.
Well, let me ask you this, then. What is the role of our fantastic boy from Scranton?
Our fantastic...
Joe Biden.
Oh. I don't know.
I mean, do you see in the future a President Boehner because the two of them are impeached, the top two?
Wow. That's an interesting... I don't think that the two of them will be impeached, but it's quite possible. Remember, Biden was the only thing Biden said, in essence, was that, listen, we didn't know that they asked for security. He says we didn't know.
So now that we know, what the hell is it going to say now?
Yeah, if I...
Never have I been proud of my 4 years with Barack Obama. I was going to say again.
If I were this committee, I would, just for spite, and I know it sounds vicious, but just for spite, I'd go after both of them. I would lay the hammer down on them. Literally bring the full force of the American people's distrust and the law, put it right on their necks, and I would say crush them. Put a boot on them.
Well, let me ask you this. Does this, in your opinion, overshadow Fast and Furious? Again, government screw up. Again, American officials killed.
No. I don't believe that there's going to be a government cover-up on Fast and the Furious. I believe that if there, in any way, this gets traction, if this gets real traction, this Benghazi investigation, I believe that the Senate is, I mean, sorry, the House of Representatives
the House.
And the Senate and this committee, I think they're going to smell blood in the water, and they're going to go after everything. It's not
well,
over.
How many other things you wonder, and I wonder if Sal might guess, how many other things have happened that we'll never know that have been covered up? Little things that could end up as big things, and the American people just don't know.
Oh, you can count on it. I mean, but you know, Reese, what you're saying, I agree, and it's what I want. But I'm going to tell you something. You know how this guy plays ball. When they do that, he's going to turn that around and say, this is why we can't get anything done. They're pressuring me. They're not looking at the issues. They want to look back. They want to push this issue, and we can't compromise. We've got a fiscal cliff. He's going to try and turn it around and say that the Republicans are playing hardball and not paying attention to the issues of the day.
He can try if he wants to, but you know what? I don't think the American people are going to let it go. I don't think they're going to let it go. And I think that this House of Representatives, I think that they feel really, really justified in going after this administration and making sure that he doesn't get the pass that he's gotten in the past 4 years. Let's go to
goest Boehner, because Boehner has always go along, get along.
Yeah, but you're absolutely right about that. But, you know, like I said, we'll see. I'm going to go to the top of the hour, guys. We'll be right back, because I got to talk about Mitt Romney. There's some new audio that came out a couple of hours ago about Mitt Romney talking to his supporters and his donors. And trust me, let's just say Mitt Romney, he's not going down without a fight. You have to hear this when we get back. We'll be back. It's Free Southern Radio.
About to hear can be devastating to your ear.
I love it. I love it.
You're listening to Reese on the Radio right here on blogtalkradio.com.
You are the worst person I know. I think what I hate most about you is your textbook liberal agenda, how we should legalize pot, man, how big business is crushing the underclass, how homelessness is the biggest tragedy in America. Well, what have you done to help? I work down at the soup kitchen. Never seen you down there. You want to help? Grab a ladle. And by the way, driving a Prius doesn't make you Jesus Christ. Oh, wait, you don't believe in Jesus Christ, or any religion for that matter, because religion is for idiots. Well, who the hell are you to talk down to anyone? But you know what? I can forgive all of that, all of it, if you weren't such a bore. That's the worst of it. You're just a big, sad bore.
Reese on the Radio, and we're back 1 minute hour right here on blogtalkradio.com, November the 14th, 2012. I didn't know this was actually going to happen, because I don't remember this maybe I wasn't listening for it, but I would love to have heard about this story. I've never really heard of a presidential candidate doing a conference call after he lost, talking to donors. But I guess Mitt Romney is that kind of guy. Maybe it's happened before. I'm not suggesting that it hasn't, but I know I've never heard it. But apparently in this conference call, he was talking to his donors and his supporters and whomever it was, I guess his staff or whatever. And the conversation went on about why he believes that he lost. Now, ABC News did the story about it with some of the audio from the conference call. Now, I'm going to try to find the audio from the entire conference call and see if I can listen to it tomorrow, because I'd love to hear all about it. But, folks, something that I think is the most amazing thing happened in that conference call. And it's something that had been told for many months before the election, but it didn't get a lot of traction. And that is the comments of one William Jefferson Clinton to Mitt Romney. Oh, yeah. And that's in the audio piece I'm about to play you right now. If you haven't heard it, look it up. This is ABC News' David Muir reporting to Diane Sawyer on World News Tonight. Was my microphone off that entire time? Folks, I am so sorry. I went in 4 minutes talking about the opening of my show, and I left you guys completely empty with no audio. My apologies, folks. I have no idea what it is that I'm doing. And that was because I was I just got distracted. I apologize, folks. It's Reese on the Radio. We are back 6 minutes after the hour. I'm sorry for the delay. Don't worry. We are back. We are live. And that was just a boneheaded move because I didn't press the microphone mute button. Forgive me. Anyway, as I was saying, and you couldn't hear it, that Mitt Romney is in the news. Apparently, a couple of hours ago, Mitt Romney had a conference call with his supporters, his surrogates, his donors, talking about why it is that he lost the election, or at least his view on why it is that he lost the election. And this is a report that was given by David Muir of ABC News. And the interesting thing about this is how one William Jefferson Clinton ended up being in the conversation about why he lost this election. Frightening stuff. But what makes it more interesting about the Bill Clinton comment is is that there have been rumors earlier that Bill Clinton was talking to conservatives saying that you guys have got to save the economy. You've got to win this election. In the background, Bill Clinton was not supporting President Barack Obama. He was talking to other conservatives saying, you've got to win this country back. So at the end of this audio, when you hear it for yourself, I think you'll be quite amazed at what Romney said he heard from Bill Clinton. It'll be at the end of the audio. Here it is.
Mitt Romney leaving his hotel the day after the election, next to the convention center where he hoped to deliver the one speech he'd written, his victory speech. But now in the week since the election, ABC News has learned Mitt Romney has been explaining his loss to his closest advisors and his top donors. And it started at a breakfast the very next morning. Now today, perhaps his most eye-opening explanations yet, during a conference call with an even larger group of donors. Romney arguing President Obama won in part because of gifts the Obama administration had given to particular groups in this country.
What the president's campaign did was focus on certain members of his base coalition, give them extraordinary financial gifts from the government, and work very aggressively to turn them out to vote.
Among those groups the gifts went to, Romney discusses the African-American community, young people, and the Hispanic community, here offering one of the gifts to them.
What the president did is he gave them two things. One, he gave them a big gift on immigration with the DREAM Act and the amnesty program.
For Hispanics, he also talked about Obamacare, the president's health care plan, being a gift too. He talked about free contraceptives, everything with young college-age women, he said on that phone call. Sources telling me this has been Romney's argument since the moment he realized he'd lost. Telling his closest circle the very next morning that America is becoming an entitled society, that some Americans are asking for government to solve problems for things they can't afford. A message reminiscent of that video about talking to donors after clinching the Republican nomination, talking about the 47%.
And so my job is not to worry about those people on everything.
And just when you thought this election was behind us, a tweet from David Axelrod, the top Obama strategist, saying, still looking through America through that 47% prism, Mitt tells donors the takers did him in. And Diane, we learned that Romney also talked to Bill Clinton after the election. He said on that call today that Clinton told him, I thought you were going to win. Then the hurricane happened. Romney using the hurricane in his discussions, too, as a reason why.
Okay, David, thank you.
So Bill Clinton. And look, I don't care. Mitt Romney's already lost. So at this particular point, he's not running again. I say, Mitt Romney, you did the right thing. Take it right to them. It's an entitlement society, and the niggas in spics weren't going to vote for you. I'm sorry. It sounds vicious, but I don't care. He went after his base. Yeah, it goes without a doubt. There's no doubt in that. And he told his donors the truth. In no uncertain terms, look, these people want stuff. There's no way I was going to convince them with words that they couldn't understand, like work and responsibility. I wasn't going to reach these people. You know, I could have used a couple of buzzwords with them and got their vote, maybe like welfare, food stamps, EBT. I could have done a rap record. I don't know. I could have done a remix with P. Diddy. Whatever. There was nothing that I could have done. Outside of giving them free stuff, it was evident. Birth control, welfare, food stamps, and amnesty. Young people, that's all they care about. Give me mine. Can I get some too? That's all it was about. That's the whole thing was about. But for Bill Clinton, I thought you were going to win. I did everything I could. I did everything I could. I was trying to do everything I could. Everything I could. I was really trying to railroad this black son of a bitch. I did everything I could because I want Hillary in there. I'd be the first husband. I did everything I could. I tried to railroad that son of a bitch. You remember what I told Ted Kennedy? You remember what I told him? I told him, man, Ted, you ain't going to support this guy. You going to support the guy that should be fetching us our coffee? That's what Bill Clinton told him. Didn't you read that in Game Change?
Did you know that, Mary?
What?
Bill Clinton told Ted Kennedy when he was going to support Barack Obama, when Ted Kennedy was going to support Barack Obama in 2008, he said, what are you talking about? You're not going to support this guy. A couple of years ago, this guy would have been getting our coffee.
Oh, that's what Clinton?
That's what Clinton told Ted Kennedy.
No.
A couple of years ago, this guy would have been getting our coffee. Yeah. Are you kidding? Come on. Bill Clinton's a classic racist.
That is hilarious.
Classic racist. He's from Alabama. Well, he's from Arkansas.
He's not from Alabama.
He's from Arkansas. So are you guys stunned to find out that Bill Clinton said, I thought you were going to win?
Nope. You know, as you're saying this, I'm reading a story. It looks like the Obama administration, I'm reading this, it looks like they're pulling Dr. Seuss out of the schools for Christmas, and they're replacing it with Dr. Jesus. So, you know, anything's possible, man. Anything's possible.
Yeah, look, it had been reported months ago that Bill Clinton, and this was by Dick Morris. Dick Morris had reported this, that Bill Clinton was going around talking to conservative supporters, conservative donors, and telling them, listen, guys, you guys got to win the country back. Because he wants Hillary to run against whoever the Republican is, but he didn't want Obama to have a second term. Now, sure, he went out there and he played his surrogate in the whole nine yards, but he in no way whatsoever it wasn't amazing what it is that he'd done. Bill Clinton was of no consequence in all of this. But it had been reported that he'd done that. But for Bill Clinton to then call Mitt Romney and say, I thought you were going to win. And we don't know Mitt Romney to be a liar here.
No, I believe that that's a true story. But you know what? I look at that and I think to myself, that isn't really the story. The story is Philadelphia. Romney doesn't get a single vote. I mean, you look at that and that is as telling as it's ever going to get in terms of what this election was all about.
Something
so
else you might have forgotten too, Sal. Remember what Obama said to Medvedev? He says, when I have my second term. He didn't say if, when.
It's true.
Doesn't that tell you something?
You know, that always, Dennis, it's so funny you say that because that bothered me more than anything. Because, you know, sometimes there's posturing, sometimes there's bravado. But he was so certain of himself when he said that. You don't just tell another world leader, after the next election, I'll be more flexible. I mean, with anything, you at least look at the cup half full in a sense, or the glass half full in a sense, and say, listen, you know, in the event or if the turnout is favorable in the next election, tell Vladimir that I'll have more flexibility. He just flat out just said, hey, after the election, don't worry, tell your boy I got him. I mean, it was just so confident.
I wasn't confident. Something else, which is much more terrible, but it's unthinkable in America to think things. But this would be normal in the Soviet Soyuz, in the Soviet Union, that it was a foregone conclusion. It was fixed.
Take a look
at St. Lucie, Florida.
I don't know about fixed. This is what it is that I believe. I believe that in the districts where Barack Obama knew he could win in the most important areas, I think Obama did his most reconnaissance, if you will. And that was in Cincinnati, which was a huge voting block that is large minority groups are there. And it would be a higher turnout than any of the rural places, even Cleveland for that matter. It outdid
Cleveland.
Home
of the Obama phone.
Yeah, it outdid Cleveland and it outdid Yorktown. Areas in Ohio were absolutely sworn. The numbers that made the most important, look at the surrounding areas. If you look on that map in Ohio, it's one district in the blue. Every district around it was red.
Taking a look at even more data in the states, the swing states. Do you know Obama won some of these areas, some of these counties, these reporting districts, by only a handful of votes, a couple of votes here, a couple of votes there. As a matter of fact, if you took a look at California, if it wasn't for San Francisco and Los Angeles, the Republicans almost just about won the state.
You know, that's,
you know, it's
going to
be retail politics. Because,
you know,
as Dick Morris said, people aren't watching TV anymore. They're fast-forwarding television commercials. So TV,
you know,
doesn't work.
But forget about that. I'll tell you this.
Huh?
Republicans have got to forget about this idea about how they cannot win the West Coast anymore. 55 electoral votes are in California. We need that state. We have got to attack that state. And I don't
care
how many Mexicans move into Los Angeles or South Central or East L.A. I don't care. We've got to attack that state. We may not be able to get San Francisco or L.A., which are the huge, largest populations there is. But if we are going to go there, start going after the people where it's costing them the most money in taxes. And that means forget about the Hollywood elites. I don't give a damn about Brad Pitt.
I'll tell you, Will, you stand at the gas station and you ask people to register to vote and ask them to register for Republican every time the price goes up. That's a start.
Mm-hmm. But you know who you go after? Go after places like the movie producers. You go after the guys who have the biggest money ever. Harvey Weinstein is, you know, forget about it. He's a gazillionaire, right? And he does anything and everything to make sure that he promotes liberal policies. Complete moron, but promotes liberal policies. But he's a big wig in Hollywood. We've got to get somebody like that. We had Geffen for a little while. You know, because we had him in 2008 because he hated Hillary. We had an opportunity to get him because he hated Hillary and he literally turned his back on him and went to Obama. But if we go to Hollywood and San Francisco, we're never going to get, forget about it because that's a done deal. But Sacramento, we can get that place. San Diego, we can get San Diego.
Let me ask you this, Reese. Since you've had some time and experience in the Boston area, you're familiar with retail politics, especially New Hampshire.
Sure.
New Hampshire's retail, California's wholesale. Do you think the California model should be back to a New Hampshire model, start knocking on doors, talking to people one-on-one, and forget trying to get the broad media through television, and talk to people personally as if they count, because they do count?
It's true. That's a big problem because as far as I'm concerned, the mainstream media is dead. It's literally knocking on death's door. When their approval rating is lower than that of Congress, because no one trusts the media anymore. They're done with their media today. They go to it nowadays. If you look at the black community, do you know what they look at? What they watch the news for? Who got shot? Who died? And the weather. That's it. That's the only thing. They want to know who had... Oh, and the lotto numbers. Yes, the lotto numbers. Definitely the lotto numbers. That's all they care about. So all that other politics stuff, they pay no attention to it. They don't care about it. So the only way that you're going to reach those people are knocking on door to door. You've got to have a ground game and a grassroots campaign to get each and every one of them. California, if we don't win California, if we can't take California, you can forget about it. We're never ever going to win another major election until we change the hearts and minds of those people in those. No, forget about Los Angeles. Nobody cares about that anymore.
And there's another thing too, which is trending Democrat, Texas.
Only because of Houston.
Because of the immigration, Dream Act, et cetera, et cetera.
But Houston is a. It's hard to believe. But guys, anybody remember this? Back in the 70s, maybe even the 80s, Houston was not a Democratic bloc.
Nope.
Never. It would be unheard of. But what happened to Houston was it became a very popular young people's town. It became a very huge college town. When young people started flocking to Houston to get jobs and all that other stuff, it changed the dynamics of that city. Dallas-Fort Worth, it's never going to change. It's always going to be conservative.
You know what, guys? The reality is, there's two. I see this in two ways, and I give you all the credit in the world, man. You have just way more hope than I do at this point. But there's two things you've got to rein in to have any chance going forward. One is the illegal vote. You have to have voter ID cards in the next major election across all of the states. But you've already got a Congress, you know, a Senate that doesn't really want to push that because they know who their constituency is. So at the state level, you're going to have to force it before it's too late. And you have so many illegals in this country that the illegal vote just always wins the day for the Democrats. And the second thing that's going to happen, it has to happen, and I believe this will happen, the younger vote needs to wake up and vote Republican. And the reason I believe that's going to happen is that they're going to realize in 3 years there's still no jobs out there. But that's the only thing that's going to wake them up, is when they can't get jobs with their degrees, because they're idealists. They're young. They don't get it. So the only thing that makes a young idealist get it is reality. And I think we're in for 3 years of reality and, you know, into the fourth. But if you don't rein that in, you can't win. The Conservative Party can't win if it doesn't get the young vote and it doesn't get the illegals off the voting rolls. And, you know, Dennis talked about the voter fraud. I thought it would be an issue, but I'm almost convinced it was an issue at this point.
But don't you think – Sal, I'll ask you this. What's a clear way for us – and I think I have the answer here, but I want to hear your opinion. What do you think is a clear way to get the young vote, the younger voter, to acknowledge that they're headed for literally – a complete demise of this republic?
I'll sum it up in a sentence. Kick them out of their parents' basements, because that's the only thing that's going to work. These kids are coddled. We coddle kids today, you know, and I'm probably the biggest offender with my 3-year-old. My wife tells me all the time, I baby him, I adore that kid. But, you know, I'm stricter I think I need to be, but at the end of the day, I won't know until he starts getting a little older. Parents just want to take their kids from cradle to grave these days. And so kids think, hey, I don't have to worry about it. I don't have to get that house. I don't have to get married. Who says I have to get married? I can live with my parents. So they don't feel the reality of the economy, and they won't as long as their parents are around. I just don't see it happening until the parents force them to recognize some level of responsibility, and I just don't know if we're that kind of country anymore.
I believe one
I'll
of the
tell you when it's going to happen, when the parents are going to be foreclosed on and everybody's out.
Well,
it's going to be a hard lesson. And the big lesson is when the, and I don't want to get Ron Paul on you, but when the United States currency is no longer the currency of the world. And that's coming.
Yeah, I was going to say we're not far away from that.
I think what we need to do, honestly, and I think this works with all kids, especially young people, they have to be shown for how stupid they are. Because if there's one thing that I know about young people, especially those in the black community and those in the Latino community, they don't like to be deemed stupid. They don't like to be deemed uninformed. They've got to attack young people at their brains. Once you tell them, don't know what you're talking about, and you can prove it to them, then they're forced to think. Once you embarrass them, kids hate embarrassment. They can't stand it. And when you watch them fumble over that embarrassment, it's evident. It's evident. It's, I mean, literally, it's palpable when you watch them fumble over their ignorance. You know, that audio that I played not too long, a couple of months ago, about that guy who went to a Michelle Obama rally when they were talking about contraception, and he asked the first question about, do you believe that the government has any right to your bedroom? And each woman said, absolutely not. No, the government should not be involved in what goes on in our bedroom. And then his follow-up question was, so why do you think that the government should be responsible for your contraception? And then they were forced to stop and think. Well, that's a very good question. I didn't really think about that. Well, there's your frickin' problem. You didn't think. You weren't thinking. The only thing you heard was a goodie bag. You didn't understand the consequences of what it is you're asking. You're telling the government that you want them in your bedroom, even though you're flat out opposed to it. Yeah, exactly.
At
you didn't see the full spectrum.
At the risk of sounding sexist, it's a known fact that physiologically women think more with emotion than men do.
Clearly.
And the fact is, when you tell a woman, whether it's BS or not, you know, and you're Liz Warren and you say that, you know, Scott Brown wants to take away your contraception or your right to your personal choices, they call it. They don't want to say abortion. They just say personal choices. Well, then immediately a good percentage of women will look at that as like, hell yeah, I'm not going to let him get away with that. I mean,
right.
You know, I just don't know how you rein this in because there are so many groups that the conservatives are losing. You know, you got to kind of pick your spots and figure out, you know, what is it. I honestly believe the next 4 years, if things go really badly, it's the only thing that's going to change it. If we meander along the way we are going, which I don't think that's possible because, you know, the Piper's coming. But if we did, then I believe in another 4 years you get the same result.
Now, I think Republicans in this particular case, when everything was on the line, got their butts kicked so bad that I think that they're going to come full throttle this time around. They're going to hit every demographic. Let me bring in Edward.
I think you can see something
Hello,
else,
Edward,
too.
How are you?
Hey, Reese, how's it going?
Pretty good, sir.
Hey, I got to disagree with you about this thing with the kids, thinking that they'll, you know, eventually get some sense. You know, you tell them facts, and they're all pretty much like Dukakis Joe, who used to call in. We told
right.
things straight up facts, and he'll just repeat the talking points that the Democratic Party stuffed in his head. The second thing I want to say, I think that this democracy, our republic, is over. You know, someone said a long time ago, I can't remember what the exact quote is, but the democracy will only exist until voters discover they can give themselves gifts from the public treasury, and then they'll keep voting for whoever promises them the most stuff. And that's exactly
Jefferson.
What's happened. Yeah, I can't remember. Yeah. You know, and that's exactly what's happened, and I think that's what's happening now. Democracy is dead.
So you don't
I want to ask something, and this might be the tip. What do young people think more of anything else? That's themselves, right? Would you agree?
Yeah.
All right. Now, with Obama as commander-in-chief, and the kids aren't stupid, the ones that joined the military, you might just have a huge drop-off in the number of voluntary enlistments forcing a draft again. And when that happens, it's going to hit the fan. Because then elections will have consequences.
I would agree, but because we're pulling out of war zones, and when the economy is really poor, you generally have more kids joining the military because it's the only opportunity they have. I think that will offset it enough that you might not see that.
Well, I'm thinking about what's happening in Israel tonight.
Oh, yeah. You aren't kidding about that one.
That's and, it. You know, like they say, it's always the little things that set off something you have no idea was going to happen, like an assassination in Sarajevo in 1914. Or an incident at Fort Sumter that blew up, you just don't know. And it's going to be another one of those little things that were unforeseen that's going to bring us in a hell of a lot of hurt.
I got to tell you, I log in to Drudge every day, and the first thing I look for is if Israel took some kind of action or if Iran did something, because I really feel that is the tipping point where our lives change to a degree that the majority of people are not prepared for.
Well, like you said in Facebook the other day, Sal, what the term that you use for the probing that Iran did with the drone. And what did they get for a response? Yeah, close your eyes and what do you see?
Yeah, that was pretty disturbing. The funny part of that story, which I kind of chuckled, if you continue to read that story, though, they couldn't even shoot the drone down. It landed successfully, and they were after it with two jets.
Yes. Right.
That's awesome.
I'd like to know how they got their hands on a drone to begin with. Remember earlier in the year, Iran just happened to get a drone. How did that happen? Who the hell was the one that allowed it to happen? And you know what we're not talking about is also the death of the Navy SEALs. They're all stuck on a helicopter. Now, normally, I understand the ROE is never to have an entire group in one chopper. And all of a sudden, it just happened to have been the ones that took out bin Laden were killed. And that's been hushed up. Or buried.
We're in a bad way, folks, and I agree with Edward. I don't want to agree with him, but I'm not feeling good right now. And, you know, I think if we all quit and if we all believe it's the end, it will be the end. It's the self-fulfilling prophecy. But at the same time, I'm looking for areas of hope like Reese is, and I just don't see them the way he sees them. And maybe
you
I'll feel differently in 6 months because I hope I will because I'm starting to prepare now for things that I never considered in the past.
But, Sal, that's because we've all known the consequences of a Mitt Romney loss. We all felt them and thought them before this election. We had hopes that we could turn it around. Is there a degree of some fear-mongering that we all had in the beginning before this election, and now that he's won, we're all going, oh, hell, what's going to happen now? And maybe that exacerbated our feelings to the point where we are now, where he's won the election. What comes next? Oh, my God, what's going to be the next shoe to drop? I agree with that. Trust me, that was how I felt when I sat here. As soon as I heard Ohio called, I mean, literally the first words that came out of my mouth were, it's over. And I know what that was. I understand why I said it. I understand why I felt it. It's because in my heart, I just couldn't imagine another 4 years of this president. And when it happened, it was just like, for me, it was just like everything that we ever believed could possibly happen, we are now in fear of. And now it just seems more evident to happen. You can't be hopefully, you know, pessimistic, if you will, about the next 4 years of Barack Obama, because in our hearts and minds, we've seen the last 4 years, and it can't get better. It there's no way that it can get better. But you know what? If we really, really, really try hard, and the people who they did elect in the House, if they fight hard enough, there's something that can come from this. I believe that everybody on the other side is so viciously angry. They're so, I don't even care if it's bitterness, but they are so angry that the one thing that they want is they want to win, and they want to tear this damn administration down any way that they can.
It has to go further. You have to stop buying from, you know, people that support this administration. You have to stop buying Comcast. If Comcast is, you know, Democratic leaning, or they're funded by companies or people, you got to research this stuff. You got to walk away from people that voted for Obama that aren't family members. You have to isolate. You have to separate. And I'm really starting to feel that way. And
yeah,
then,
Comcast owns NBC, which owns MSNBC. That should tell you something.
Yeah, there you go.
I mean, Edward, what's the plan for the next years?
I think Edward just actually signed off.
You know, so I just don't know where this goes. I really don't.
A lot of people don't. And
the scandal, if you don't, you know, what's the end game of this Petraeus issue, right? So Republicans are frothing at the bit because we're angry, and we know Americans died, and all, but at the end of the day, what's the end game? You get Biden as a president? Is that the...
You know, the big problem is Democrats are not frothing at the bit. When I was both parties would have been outrageous. Both parties were outraged at Richard Nixon. Where the hell is the Democrats are being outraged?
Well, they're not going to be. But Dianne Feinstein, she's at least stepped up and said that she's not happy about this. And she's not happy about what went on there, and especially what happened with General Petraeus. She's not happy about it. I really, really believe wholeheartedly that she will get others to follow her lead on this. I really believe that. It's not over
yet. Then if that happens, then you're saying that the media is smelling blood and they'll turn on His Honor the Barry.
Remember, they don't have to fight for his reelection anymore. He's already there.
They've done their job. Now, if they ignore anything, now if they ignore it, the American people will take notice because there's nothing for them to fight for anymore. Their job's
and
over.
And they will take their revenge. The populace will take their revenge out on the Democrats in 2 years.
Well, you know what? You raise a good point. And this may actually work in favor of him having to step down. Democrats are not going to want to support him if more facts come out because of the next election. He can't get reelected, so he's almost lame duck anyway. Maybe they have.
Wait till the next unemployment figures come out. Want to bet it's around 9%?
Oh.
Yeah. Exactly.
Oh.
When the next unemployment numbers come out, and if it continues again, you know, I'm still waiting for this Petraeus thing. It might not reach the press until some late Friday afternoon because we don't know whether or not he's testifying tomorrow or Friday. But
I'm going to tell you a prediction right here in Reese on the radio. By July, you're going to have a perfect storm of economics. The stock market going, the world, the reserve currency blowing, countries being calling in the markers, widespread unemployment. It's going to be a terrible thing here in this country.
Ugh.
Worldwide. It's not so much an American problem
anymore.
It's a world problem. And it's overloaded debt.
Did you guys see the new drugs report headline today?
Which? Because something changed a couple times today.
Latino poverty rate climbs to 28%.
Wow.
But they voted for Barry. Because it's the other guy's problem, not theirs.
Absolutely. That's the other guy's problem. You're 100% right.
Pass me the Platano. Thank you.
Let's take a break. We'll be back. Stick around on the Trees on the Radio. More news, more views, and we'll end the show when we return right here on Reason Radio. That's Weezer on Reese on the Radio right here on blogtalkradio.com. It is November 14, 2012. About 17 minutes till the top of the hour and the end of the show. Let me just read what this story says about the Latino poverty rate. It says Latino poverty rate climbs to 28%. This is from Fox News Latino. While Latinos are gaining in political clout, they are also falling down the economic ladder, new census numbers show. Latinos' poverty rates climbed to 28% after the census reconfigured its algorithm to take into account medical costs and government programs. The Hispanic poverty level rose after the government took into account safety net programs such as food stamps and housing, which have lower participation among immigrants and non-English speakers. Overall, the ranks of America's poor edged up last year to a high of 49.7 million based on the new census measure. The numbers released Wednesday by the Census Bureau are part of a newly developed supplemental poverty measure devised a year ago. This measure provides a fuller picture of poverty that the government believes can be used to assess safety net programs by factoring in living expenses and taxpayer-provided benefits to that the official formula leaves out. Based on the revised formula, the number of poor people exceeded the 49 million, or 16% of the population, who were living below the poverty line in 2010. That came as more people in the slowly improving economy picked up low-wage jobs last year but still struggled to pay living expenses. The revised poverty rate of the 16.1% also is higher than the record 46.2 million, or 15%, that the government's official estimate reported in September. Due to medical expenses, higher living costs, and limited immigrant access to government programs, people 65 or older, Hispanics and urbanites, were more likely to be struggling economically under the alternative formula. Also spiking higher in 2011 was poverty among full-time and part-time workers. The portrait of poverty broken down by state notably changed. California tops the list, but of course. Hurt by high housing costs, large numbers of immigrants, as well as a less generous tax credit and food stamps programs to buoy low-income families. It is followed by the District of Columbia. Wow. Arizona, Florida, and then Georgia. I cannot believe that D.C. outranked Arizona, Florida, and Georgia, considering the fact that Arizona is a border state. Anyway, in the official census tally, it was rural states that were more likely to be near the top of the list, led by Mississippi, New Mexico, Arizona, and Louisiana. We're seeing very slow recovery with increases in poverty among workers due to more new jobs which are low wage. That's according to Timothy Smeeting, a University of Wisconsin-Madison economist who specializes in poverty. He specializes in poverty. I love it when a guy specializes in something. He says, quote, as a whole, the safety net is holding many people up, while California is struggling more because it's relatively harder there to qualify for food stamps and other benefits. Wow. Broken down by groups, poverty was disproportionately affecting people 65 and older, about 15.1%, or nearly double the 8.7% rate calculated under the official formula. They also have higher medical expenses, such as Medicare premiums, deductibles, and drug costs that aren't factored into the official rate. Working-age adults 18 to 64 saw an increase in poverty from 13.7% to 15.5%, due mostly to commuting and child care costs. Stop having babies! You pretty much get the gist of this, but the breakdown of...
Good job in your hood.
They say that this is... Fox News Latino is the one who posted this, but it's based on reporting by the Associated Press. You can read it there yourself. So what I find extremely amazing about all of this is that here it is, the poverty level is going up in these communities, but yet they're voting for Democrats overwhelmingly. As you heard, the Democrats, they got 71% of the Latino vote.
But if the reward is, and this is, again, this is the most important thing that people need to read, especially within that voting block. It's like, here it is that you're voting overwhelmingly for this president. You had 4 years of his policies, and the poverty rate in your communities rose.
They'll say that's because more people came in 4 years.
Yeah, well, you know, that's a ridiculous argument. But these are the arguments that we have to make to the young people because, you know, again, and Edward, I know you don't agree with me on this one, but again, I think this is where you have to make that argument with these young people. You have got to, because look, as a younger man, that was the way that I would ever do with my nieces, my nephews. The only way that you prove a point with them is by pointing out the facts where they're indisputable. You've got to do that. I'm not saying we need to be parents of these people, but we've got to deal with them in very, very common sense ways. Forget about ideology. Just common sense ways.
You can try that, Reese, but these kids have been indoctrinated with this leftist ideology from the time they step into school. And, you know, there's no way of taking them out that brainwashing. You know, you get some of them, most of them are not going to, you know, listen to you. You're going to think you're, oh, mean man, you don't understand. We don't have any jobs because the rich corporations are moving them all overseas. They're just going to repeat the Democrat talking points to you.
Yeah.
But even with that being said,
you know, he's right, Reese. He really is. I know a kid who's a special needs, 21 years old, high school 4 years ago. In the English class, he was told, all you kids who are 18 and older, make sure, and if you're not, make sure you vote for Obama because McCain is for the rich, and McCain will kill the polar bears. And they were believing it. Special needs kids they were teaching this crap to.
But do you believe,
in public
honestly,
school?
Do you believe honestly that teachers have that kind of influence? Now, maybe on our younger, maybe on those who are in grade school. But kids are rebellious in high school. They don't believe these
leftist special needs class.
Teachers. Say again?
Barely, you know, they were functional, but you know what I mean? So they were influenced. And take a look at that story again in Fox News Latino, a couple of stories down. You'll see the headline, Election 2012, Obama wins re-election, clinches Latino vote. And if you read the story, the whole thing is all pro-Obama and all anti-Mitt. The whole thing. It says, Romney also aligned himself with some of the nation's most hardline proponents of tough immigration policies, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera.
And I hate to bring another nasty truth into this conversation. It's just going to depress us all even further. But the reason that the poverty numbers are going down is because there's an underground economy in Latino communities because they're laborers, and a lot of them work under the table. So they have these under-the-table jobs, and then they collect. So they're making a mint. What incentive would they have at that point to get a real job?
Where I live, we have a lot of people are collecting Social Security on their American address, but they live in the Dominican Republic, and then they fly back here just to have back the annual interview or the occasional interview to make sure they're still eligible, and then they fly right back down to the Dominican Republic. And where I live, you have all, and I'm sure maybe where Sal is, you'll see a lot of these stores that transfer money transfer stores. Now, why is there a need for that?
Yep.
Yeah, they are at every corner. You know, it's interesting. I understand.
They're in every Walmart.
I understand your argument here as far as, you know, as far as this, you know, illegal labor, as it were. We got American contractors, landscapers hiring people illegally.
No, you got illegal aliens starting their own landscaping companies.
This is also true.
What do you expect? You have an illegal alien in the White House.
They're not working for contractors anymore. They're creating their own contracting company. They're getting one legal guy or two legal guys creating a contracting company, a landscaping company, any type of home improvement, painting, you know, jack of all trades, master of none.
Right, right. And getting paid at scale.
And then they themselves are hiring their own people, contributing to their own community. And those people are then spending money, a little bit of money here, but for the most part, sending all that money back home.
Those people stick together. They're not working for people no more. They're starting their own shit.
Mary's right.
There's a shopping center right here across the street from us. On both sides of the street. It is totally Hispanic. There is no other business.
Oh, right. You're absolutely right.
Other than Pizza Hut and Popeyes,
right.
There's no other American business in that entire shopping center.
Well, I guess if I had to have two American businesses, I'd take those two because I love my fried chicken and pizza.
He said, I love my fried chicken and my pizza.
Me too.
But, you know, Mary brings up a very valid point that, you know, now these Hispanics or whatever it is, they've been able to start their own businesses and be able to hire their own people. But what's even worse than that is that there's been no crackdown on illegal hirings in these places.
Reese, I have some inside info on this, and I have a friend of mine who's in business. It's worse than that. What they're doing is going into the yellow pages and looking at businesses that are insured, putting business names under the same business name and putting new phone numbers attached to it. And so what happens is some people get the real business, get the fraud business, and they're living off the insurance and the reputation of these real businesses and not paying a dime in taxes.
Really?
It's a game that's going on right now with small business.
So break this down to me one more time. Exactly how – okay, so they go into the yellow pages and they do exactly what now?
So you look at a business. Let's say it's
right.
Joe's Locksmith. Joe's been in business 20 years. He has 20 guys, a reputation, yellow pages ads, and they've got a number in the yellow pages. These people go out and they – so let's say it's Joe's Plumbing. They'll go out and open Joe's Plumbing LLC or Joe's Plumbing Apostrophe. They'll just change the name subtly. They'll open their own business. They won't take any insurance or anything. Then people go, oh, I heard about Joe's Plumbing. They look up for the number. Some people get the real business because they get the real number. Other people will call this guy, and he'll say, yeah, I'm Joe's Plumber. Okay, I'll be there in an hour. He does the job. He gets paid. Okay, he never files because he's not a registered business. It's even more insidious than that, and there's a lot of
that's new to me. That's terrible.
Yeah, that is incredibly new to me. I've never heard of that.
That's actually not only an illegal alien thing. A lot of contractors do that.
Yeah.
I know a locksmith who that happened to. Guy used to be his business partner.
Exactly.
Did the same thing. Yeah.
That's incredible.
So how the hell do you protect yourself?
You can't. It's very difficult to prove because guy could say, hey, I didn't know there was a Joe's Plumbing. And then if they say, well, you didn't file, at that point he's screwed. But that's if he's legal. If he's illegal,
right.
He just disappears.
Right, exactly. No harm, no foul, nothing traceable.
Exactly.
It's really insidious.
But the bad guy is Joe Arpaio. You figure.
Man, you know what? I'll be honest with you, man. I love Joe Arpaio. I love him to death.
He's 80 years old. He just announced he's going to run for re-election
that's,
for 4 years.
You know,
he just got re-elected just
the
other day.
That's the part that bothers me the most. I almost feel like God may have smited him that he had to face a guy like President Obama while he's turning 80 years old. Because, God, if Joe Arpaio were 20 years younger, wow, would he be an opposite. I mean, here's an 80-year-old man calling Barack Obama, come meet me man to man so I can show you what this is really about.
He'd run for president if it was 20 years ago.
If it was, no, you crazy? They treat him like Strom Thurmond. Not that I'm suggesting Strom Thurmond is a good person here, but you know what I mean.
Oh, of course not. You ain't gonna eat no fried chicken here.
Are you kidding me? Joe Arpaio is the new Strom Thurmond, according to liberals. I mean, that's exactly what he is. He's nothing but an old school racist.
You better not let Trent Lott hear you tell him that.
I like Trent Lott, too. But, you know, again, this is, you know, it's amazing. And Mary, it's funny because now you brought that up and I'm thinking about it. It's like you're absolutely right. We've got this big sort of strip mall across the street from our home, and that's all you see is every company, with the exception of those new franchises, that are all Spanish-owned.
And that almost that entire strip mall down the street is all Spanish owned. There's a Spanish supermarket. There's a Spanish restaurant.
But see, those are the people that we should be able to appeal to, though. Unless their business is running illegally.
Let me ask you this. What's the NAACP doing about it?
Nothing. Nothing. And that's amazing because, you know, they'll complain each and every day that Latinos get businesses whenever they want them.
And wait a minute.
But blacks can't get one.
Yeah, you're right about that. Yeah.
I'm not familiar with this, but maybe Reese, you can answer this. Do you know in your memory, did the NAACP ever have empowerment classes for free enterprise?
Say again, Mary was talking at the same time, Dennis. I apologize. Go on.
Did they ever have, for the black community, empowerment classes to treat or to inform blacks, their members, about free enterprise and how to make it as free entrepreneurs?
They did that a long time ago. In fact, I saw it more in the 90s than I've seen it at any time in my lifetime. But they don't do that
anymore. Did it work?
Of course not. Look where they are now. Look where they are now. I mean, they tried it in Harlem. They tried it in Harlem unsuccessfully. Each and every one of the businesses, they fell through, and they had to bring in big corporations. The only
and why is that? Why did they
the
fall through?
The only successful black business that's in Harlem right now is the Magic Johnson Movie Theater.
Or Godfather's Pizza?
Say again?
Or Godfather's Pizza? 999.
No, it's not there. All right, folks, that's our show for tonight. We will see you tomorrow. Thank you, Edward, Sally D, of course, and Dennis the Mass Menace. We will see you tomorrow. Same back time, same back channel. It's always a pleasure. We'll see you then, folks.